The Connecticut Department of Health has released a new report detailing problems with COVID-19 infection control at 20 nursing homes across the state. The report comes after over 200 unannounced visits to nursing homes. The Connecticut Department of Health worked in partnership with the Connecticut National Guard as well as inspectors from the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention after visits finding 20 nursing homes were delinquent. The report details the major problems found, including improper notification inside the facility and to families, improper physical distancing between residents, and improper use or cleaning of PPE. People who want to check on the compliance for certain facilities can easily access the state's website and search for the time period between April of 2020 and today's current date. The way it works now is the facilities have time to review and potentially dispute the findings of deficiency, but they must come up with a plan of corrective action that is approved by the department. Once the plans of correction are approved, the findings will be posted online. Many of the facilities have already started enhanced staff training and been given additional deliveries of personal protective equipment. Governor Ned Lamont says, quote, thanks to some amazing work, we've been able to source material. We've got a 60-day supply. We got shipments going out to our different nursing homes. They've already arrived, and we're going to keep going. I want to make sure that we have a stockpile, end quote. Our next guest to discuss this a little bit further in depth is a ranking member on the aging committee with me a couple of years ago, State Senator Kevin Kelly. Kev, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. How are you today?
Not bad. Nice to hear your voice. How was your weekend?
It was nice. I mean, it's a long weekend because of Memorial Day, and it's while it was different, it was still a day that we all needed to, honor the veterans.
Of course.
While sheltering in place, you know, whether it's flying flags or just telling the grandkids about why we have the holiday and why it's so important to remember those that made the ultimate sacrifice so that we can have the lifestyle and liberties that we so dearly enjoy.
You are 100% accurate, my friend, and to no surprise. There are a generation of kids who they appreciate the day off from school, whether that's being in school or online classes that they're taking right now, and just think that the day is for hot dogs and hamburgers and cookouts and just enjoying the day off. You're right. They're not fully aware of Memorial Day, or they confuse it with Veterans Day, which I almost did, where we pay tribute to those who were in our armed forces. Memorial Day, and you just said this very eloquently, that we are paying tribute to those who did make the ultimate sacrifice. But it's sad that there are kids who don't fully comprehend why we have the day off.
True. And, you know, like I say, freedom's not free. And, you know, they've also been blessed with, you know, historic peacetime in the sense that we don't have like a Vietnam War conflict and people being drafted. We still have, you know, armed services overseas. And, you know, it's a sobering thought that, you know, we get to do what we get to do. Many people look at it as the kickoff of summer, but it's really the
right,
the honoring the sacrifice, because we wouldn't be able to be who we are, live the life we want, have the liberties of free speech and assembly without somebody willing to make that sacrifice.
Well, amen to that, my friend. Amen to that. So I read this report a little while ago about these nursing homes, and it just seems that when we hear that of the uptick of people who have contracted the coronavirus, or more specifically the disease associated with the coronavirus, which is COVID-19, it's no surprise to find out that it's our elder population of age 70 and older. And a lot of it originating in these senior facilities or these nursing homes. And there are some that play by the rules and go out of their way to maybe even enhance the already existing regulations. And then there's those who, well, I guess according to this report, are really lacking in that field. What would cause one group home to lessen or relax the regulations and another one to exceed? I guess I don't get that.
Well, Gary, the issue here really, I think, centers on the fact that the eyes and ears of many of our seniors, and keep in mind that many of the seniors in nursing homes have diminished capacity of one sort or another, dementia, Alzheimer's. And so it's their loved ones who become their eyes and ears, the boots on the ground that can go in every day and make sure, you know, the facilities and everyone is watching their P's and Q's. They were effectively shut out and told that they could not come in. So you didn't have the family member who was able to see, you know, was mom getting the three squares a day? Was she being properly taken care of? So that wasn't going on. And I'm not going to say it's just the nursing homes. As you know, matter of fact, we also have to look at assisted livings and congregate housing. It's much broader than just nursing homes, home care providers. But it's a, I'm going to say, a more global and holistic approach that is necessary. When I saw that report, you know, I certainly raised an eyebrow. It's not something we didn't know. Obviously, the experience from Italy and even the nursing homes in Washington in this country, we knew that the target population was our elderly. We knew what it did to people of that age population in, you know, populous or congregate type of housing. And yet there weren't the proper safeguards put in place. For example, a lot of individuals were discharged from hospitals directly to nursing homes. And that's why one facility, you know, when the patient was COVID positive, that's why that facility might have a larger incidence than another, when there should have been a, some sort of like a step down unit in a hospital or other facility before the person went into the nursing home. And what I think we need to do is start to look at this from a larger perspective. I don't think the governor benefited from the experience and knowledge of his legislative, I'm going to say, branch of government. I mean, we weren't asked from the aging committee, hey, what right. do you think is going on here? We could have brought valuable knowledge and resources to the table. But he was doing what he was doing with his executive orders moving forward. And I think what we need to do as a legislature is to investigate and evaluate, maybe a task force to study this issue, to look at all the aspects, to look at hospitals, to look at nursing homes, to look at labor. I mean, part of that, I mean, there was a story I saw over the weekend where DPH was telling nursing homes that they didn't have to give residents showers because of the damage to PPE, because they didn't have enough PPE. In labor, I mean, I've got constituents who passed, who worked in nursing homes because they contracted COVID-19. And so we got to look at it from all angles, but I think one of the voices that has to be at the table is the family member, the loved ones of the individuals who were affected and who are the most vulnerable here. And that's the legislature. You can't remove the family's voice from the process. And that's what the governor's been doing here.
You know, in you're, as much as you are right, it doesn't help at all where the Department of Public Health comes under scrutiny, especially over the last couple of months. You had this abrupt resignation from the deputy commissioner, and then more recently, a dismissal, for lack of a better term, of the commissioner. And I would think at a time when public health is really front and center, this would be a time when we would rely more on the Department of Public Health, particularly the leadership within the department.
Well, obviously, the governor believed that a change was necessary. I think when you look at the percentage of fatalities in nursing homes, when you look at the you know, we're like 70 plus, we're like number three or four in the country as a percentage of residents in nursing homes who are being afflicted and dying from COVID-19. It is something, and I think that was in response with that. But going forward, I think is the real issue here. You, at the top of this interview, you mentioned that he was looking to stockpile 60 days of PPE.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are we doing? All modeling, the experts are telling us that we're going to have a resurgence in the fall. Well, when that resurgence comes, what's the game plan? And this is one of the problems with this governor. When he had that Reopen Connecticut 50-member group, he's now disbanding that in favor of a out-of-Connecticut Boston consulting group of three or four people that aren't even going to live under the same regulations that they're going to put the rest of the state of Connecticut under. What are they going to do? What's happening? There's no sunlight. There's no transparency on these actions, and I don't know whether or not he's planning for the fall to make sure that if there's a resurgence, we're not going to have the same experience.
Well, you're kind of,
I think our government demands that.
You're kind of answering the questions that I have lined up for you. You know, it's why is the legislature so locked out of these decision makers? And even with the task force that we had for the first 30 days, I know we transitioned now over to this Boston consulting group, but even with the task force, the media was locked out, the legislature was locked out, nothing was FOI-able. There were no minutes being taken. It was very secretive, and it almost reminds me of the old way of politics, those backroom deals that were being made. And I wasn't there. You saw nothing. I heard nothing. Nothing happened. You know, it's very disenchanting to be a citizen of the state knowing that something like that is going on. Nevertheless, here we are. How do we get the governor, therefore, to listen and include the legislature and, by the way, be more transparent?
Well, I think we definitely need, more of a voice. We need to have people to call and to tell the governor that their voice is important and that his perspective isn't the only perspective. When you're talking about old school politics, Gary, I thought you were going to go back to the King of England, because that's the old school politics.
Well, the monarchy. Yeah. I mean, I could have easily gone back there. Right.
And the other thing that I hear that's disconcerting about this Boston consulting group is that they're also doing this not only at $250,000 a week. I mean, that's good money,
yeah,
if you can find it. But the other is that they're also doing this for other states like New York, Boston, Massachusetts. So they have various other states that they're doing the same thing for. And my concern is, seeing that they're not Connecticut residents, is are they going to put Connecticut first, or are they going to put the region first, or are they going to put one of the other states first? And that's why we have a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. There is nothing better than to have a government that listens to the people, responds to the people. That's what we did. When you were in the legislature, you listened to your constituents. I listened to mine. I bring that voice to Hartford to be heard. It's not that the governor gets to contract with out-of-staters to decide what the people of Connecticut are going to live with. And the fact that he's doing it in a non-transparent manner is what is really particularly, I think, grinding the gears of the legislature, because I can't point with certainty that we're on the right track, that we will be prepared come the fall, and that we won't have another huge problem with nursing homes that result in so many individuals losing their lives. It's just that important.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, Senator, I'm very concerned, it's particularly for our elder population, not so much this summer, but this fall when the weather changes to, cooler temperatures again. I know when I was the ranking member of aging in the House and you in the Senate, and I know you're an elder attorney as well, so we have the best interest of our aging population. If the legislature was included, or if, I don't know, if the governor asked you Through your experiences, your opinions in what to do going forward, should there be a second wave of this, and what we can do to further protect our seniors, what advice would you provide?
Well, I think one of the things, and I've talked with some of my colleagues, Representative Sean Scanlon's one. I saw an article on the CT Mirror over the weekend, and what you need to do is to sit down with all the stakeholders. This isn't just a nursing home problem or a hospital problem or a labor problem. It's you got to come at it holistically. We got to look at the entire playing field. And what we need to do is look at the best practices. Why did some nursing homes have lower incidence of infection and mortality than others? Why did some facilities have better access to PPE and others didn't? What, you know, is going on? Why is it that some workers work at multiple facilities? What's happening in the community? That's another aspect of this is home care. What are the home care providers doing? But in the process, you know, and the governor has tried to do this at the executive 10,000 foot level, but you can't exclude the families, the friends, the loved ones who are the eyes and ears who are taking care of seniors. You can't exclude that experience. And that's where the legislature comes in, is to be able to have the people's voice, even the residents' voice. I mean, I've had residents call me, people in nursing homes that still have capacity, and they're calling me and telling me how horrible that experience has been. Yeah. Sitting there knowing that there's COVID is present in the building that they're living in and that they're in a vulnerable situation. And it's a lonely situation because they don't have friends and family able to come in.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Not only you could hear from the residents, but also the family members. You know, you've had Mother's Day that's come and gone. You'll have Father's Day coming up in a few weeks or a month approximately. And these are opportunities traditionally that families would be together, whether inside one of these residences or not. And yet it's tough for the entire family, not just that, you know, that senior, so to speak. And yet there's no, I don't know, what is the plan going forward when they can accept visitor, family members, you know, to come and see them?
Well, I mean, it's...
Because you hate hearing about people that, you know, these seniors who have passed away and dying alone. It just saddens me, you know, that at a time when you should have your loved one with you or loved ones with you, they're not. And there's something wrong with that.
Well, and Gary, also, you know, there was Easter and we talk about faith-based times. Priests can't go into nursing homes to give last rites.
Right.
That was another issue. So people were going to go through this. You know, nobody wants to pass, and certainly nobody wants to pass alone. But even if you have faith, to not be able to have your pastor come and provide the sacrament of last rites, I mean, that was another very difficult and anxiety-ridden experience. Mm-hmm. And this is the families are, you know, looking at that. I mean, that's a bad one. But even as they were moving their loved ones around, that was also stressful because many just got moved from one room to another room.
Yeah.
Family members weren't consulted. They, you know, all of a sudden they're in a new room. They're disoriented. They don't know what's going on. And, you know, it's to an extent, we've lost the human element.
Yes, we did.